Come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter. Weekly we share discussions, WWSD. Interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to fandom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. So who do we have on tonight?
We actually have a very special guest tonight, Seamus. We are joined by actress and podcaster, Caslyn Rose. Caslyn is the host of the Always Acting podcast, where she shares her experience and advice for 10 plus years of acting in the industry. Caslyn, it's a pleasure having you on the podcast this evening. How's it going?
Yay, it's going well. Thank you so much. I'm really excited and honored to be a part of your podcast. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for coming on.
We love actors. We haven't had a lot of actors, but yeah, we definitely were talking literally the other night, like we want to talk to more actors. So it's funny you reached out to us. So that was awesome.
Yeah. You know, what's funny. I saw you guys had a post on Reddit. I would say, I don't even know when it was, but I actually screenshotted it. And it's been like in my folders for a while. And I was just going through and I was like, oh, gotta hit up these guys. Yeah. Thanks. Courtesy of Reddit. I found you guys and here we are.
Thanks, Reddit.
Yep.
Maybe I should do that for my podcast as well. But I am actually kind of in the stage finally where people are coming to me as opposed to like always having to hunt people down. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's a sweet spot.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things. It's like when people reach out to us, this is like, oh man, I don't have to like hunt you down. It's so much nicer when they come to you. So thank you. But speaking of acting though, how'd you actually get started in the field of acting?
I always think this is a really interesting situation because I was never the kid that liked attention. I wasn't the kid that was always being quirky and silly. I was never the kid that was like, I want to be on TV. That wasn't me. I was the really, really shy, the shy girl who was like too scared to raise her hand in class because I didn't want to answer the question because people were going to hear my voice. Like, I didn't want you guys to look at me. So I grew up in sports. Gymnastics was like my game. And it's a very individual sport. You're very to yourself. And so once I sort of stopped my gymnastics career, I somehow wandered into dance, which is kind of similar in a sense of to be a dancer. It seems like you're kind of like out there with your body and people are looking at you, which is not anything that I liked to do, but I just liked moving my body so much. Yeah. So from dance classes, it was the first time I ever went to a dance competition. I was performing in it and yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was like puberty or what, but it was like the first time being on stage and performing to everybody was like, oh, like this is amazing. Like this huge light bulb moment for me. That was pretty much it. You know, I got hooked on TRL and I would watch that like every single day coming home from school. And then it was like, yeah, I'm going to be a backup dancer. And I think just it kind of evolved into acting and pretty much just acting because I don't think my body could do nearly half the stuff it used to do. I just, yeah, that wouldn't happen for me.
Was there a certain style of dance that you were, you specialized in?
Yes. I am actually naturally like really flexible. So I was always, you know, more towards like jazz dancing. I did enjoy, you know, your classic styles, ballet, but I think it's pretty known that ballet kind of has like a very standard for body types and what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I can do hip hop, but it doesn't really look that good on me. So I always went for like more jazz, which is kind of the in between of hip hop and ballet. And then later on in my career, I actually transitioned to Middle Eastern dancing. And that's what I was doing for the past, well, before I guess kind of stopped dancing, was performing with a dance company in LA.
Okay.
Belly dancing, Armenian, samba, international styles.
Were you acting as well as like during your dancing career?
Yeah. So the original goal, which I know it sounds crazy, acting was always plan B, which is like the worst plan B you could ever think of.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started dancing and it was like, you know, I'm going to do a short film here. And I actually started out doing background work, not having like the slightest idea of really what it was. It was kind of just an easy paycheck. I think I ultimately knew I wanted to be an actor. I just wasn't sure that when there was going to be like a boom, let's do acting full time. I don't know. In my mind, in my world, I thought that I was going to be able to do two at, you know, both at the same time. And that just wasn't the case. Like, I think I was spreading myself really, really thin, trying to do both. And that was not it. So yeah, it basically took a back injury for me to be like, all right, well, we can't really dance so much anymore. Let's do plan B. And here I am.
Do you still miss like dancing as much as you used to dance, or have you kind of aged out?
I do. I miss it a lot. Like, yeah, I mean, you can find me dancing in my home at any time, at the grocery store, anywhere. I think this is probably like the longest period that I've gone without taking a dance class. Typically, I'm in class, you know, used to be, you know, once or twice a week. Then I'd have rehearsals. Then we'd do a show on the weekend. And now it's like, I haven't done anything in 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been really hard to not dance. But the good thing and what I like about dancing, especially Middle Eastern in particular, you can do it till you're, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60s, whatever. Like, there is no age limit. And so one of these days, I got to get my butt back into it. It's just a matter of time, really.
What is Middle Eastern dancing?
Belly dancing. Okay. Oriental is another term for it. Yeah.
So how did you actually get into Middle Eastern dancing? Was it just like a progression or?
Yeah, it's funny because I think people see me and they're like, you were a belly dancer? What? Especially I'm white, guys. So people don't typically like, how did you fall into that? But yeah, I actually was living in LA at the time. Had like a back injury, sort of moved away towards the Riverside area, which is like, if you're familiar with LA, it's like an hour or so away, but it's far enough to be annoying that you don't want to drive like in and out. I ultimately saw a casting for a dance company and I was like, you know what? It might be a great opportunity for me to get back in LA and see what it is. Turns out it was for belly dancing. So essentially this dance company was looking for jazz dancers in particular, because we are quick to pick up choreography. We're good with music, flexible. And she's like, you know, I just figured if I can hire jazz dancers, I can train you. And that's basically how it started. There's two different styles. There's Egyptian and there's also tribals, which you're going to see at like the Ren Faire. Egyptian is what I was doing. And that's what you're going to see at the restaurant. So for me, like, you know, once you start wearing those fancy costumes with lots of sparkle and sequins and you get paid and tips and you get kind of hooked. And from there you just start growing and you get sucked in. It's a good thing. I love it. I really, really do.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was.
Do you still have the costumes?
I do. And I actually got to the point where I was like making my own costumes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I bought a sewing machine. I have like the bedazzled, I have everything. And I'm like, well, now I'm 3 times the size I was. Now they're just sitting in my closet. I'm like, what am I going to do with them? And I don't want to give them away because one, I sweat in them. And two, they're mine and I like them. And, you know, they just look really pretty in my closet. Okay. They just look pretty there.
Has the dancing helped you in acting at all with like just being able to move and work around people like physically?
Yeah, it really, really has. That's one of the classes that's sort of recommended for actors is movement. Not only just like blocking and staging, but feeling comfortable and aware of my body, I think is really important for actors to know. Our bodies are our tools. And if you're only using, say, your head or, you know, your heart and your emotions, you're kind of really missing the rest of your body. So it is something that is recommended for actors to do movement and dancing. And ultimately, I'm just going to go back to belly dancing really quickly, because I find that Middle Eastern and belly dancing was more acceptable for all body types. You know, we wear a bra top and a skirt. It helped me become so much more comfortable with myself, my confidence. I just was able to accept myself, which I think a lot of people may struggle with. Yeah, it really helped with confidence and just being comfortable with myself. So yes, that has helped acting.
That translates to being a better actress, right? Maybe like being comfortable, being confident, all of that on screen.
Yeah. And I don't know if, you know, some people who've never been set of a movie, but it's not just you, the camera and the director. There's like a bajillion people there. So sometimes like you're doing or saying the most ridiculous things and it's not a performance, but it is a performance at the same time. You have to be really comfortable and confident in yourself and your skills to be able to do your scenes on camera. So, you know, I think it all really comes to like a nice well-rounded individual.
And did your gymnastic career, like, did that help, like, with the transition into dancing at all, or was it kind of different?
It did. It did. Okay. So, yeah, because I started gymnastics when I was 2, and then I went all the way till I was 14. So the only thing that I had to work on was actually being comfortable to move my body, leaps, jumps, turns. Those were all things I already knew. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I was able to kind of get in with the dance company sooner than some people who are still learning how to turn, because I had been doing that already for years. And I had, like, incredible strength that takes a little while to develop. I'd already done that.
When you had your back injury and you decided to go, kind of go all in on acting, what were, like, some of the first steps that you took in taking that new direction?
That was a really awful time.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
No, it's fine. It was really hard. It was like my whole world was flipped upside down. It was like I had a general idea of what to do with acting, but now I kind of had to go into it a little bit more full time, got into classes, made sure that I had a profile up on all the casting websites. Yeah, headshots. And honestly, just trying to audition and work as much as possible.
What is it like getting auditions, like, before you're established with, like, with representation and all of that?
It can be very challenging. I think there's a lot that people sort of need to be aware about that you don't really think about. There, I mean, anybody, you can post a casting notice. I can post a casting notice. And I don't think people think about that. I think people, you know, maybe actors assume that everybody is coming from a large production company or a studio, and that's not the case. Like, literally, I have posted castings and had people respond to my castings. And who am I? Nobody. You know, I had a web series at the time, so I was looking for actors. But I think being able to look at a casting notice and decide whether it's something you want to do is really important. And that sort of entails, if it's a copy credit sort of thing, what are you going to get out of it? Is it going to be copy credit? Do you actually need the copy credit? And you have to think, when you're doing stuff like copy and credit, it's filmmakers who are just starting with their careers as well, or they're looking for footage. On the flip side, it's non-union and you're not getting paid. So you kind of have to understand and be aware that the project may never be finished and you're never going to get it. So you have to really think of what you want out of your casting to make the connection with people. Is it for networking? Do you want that 125 SAG ultra low budget? Do you want to just gain experience being on set, because you're not guaranteed the credit and you're not guaranteed the footage, even though that's what it says? There's a lot to be on the lookout for, especially looking at castings as a non-union actor and when you're new. And it's ultimately, I think everyone knows, it is a catch-22. How do you get more auditions if you don't have an agent? How do you get an agent if you don't have enough credit? You kind of have to really learn to decipher for yourself what you want to do and what's worth XYZ.
You mentioned a term, copy credit. I'm not familiar with that. What does that mean?
Say, for example, there's an audition or a casting and they just do copy credit. That means you're not getting paid, but in return, in exchange, you're going to get a copy of the material to use for your demo reels. And you're going to get your name on IMDb or in the credits. So that's the thing, is like, you don't always get that. That's what they say you will get sometimes, but you often don't. You may have to chase the filmmaker down for your footage, or oftentimes, because everyone's new and practicing, the footage may be corrupt, or it's so bad that they scrap it, or it just never gets finished. And you've just spent your entire day or week working on this project or nothing.
And that's pretty common in the industry for copy credits for people just starting out.
Yeah. I mean, it is something that happens. I mean, like I said sort of before, I can put out a casting and I'm not a filmmaker, but I can go and try to make a project and I may not be that great and it could be shot with my iPhone. So that's possibly what you could get. I do always advise to research the names that are on the casting. If it's a production company, if it's director, casting director, research them. See if they've done other projects and other work to see what their work looks like, if they have any. That way you can at least, one, feel comfortable with safety, but hopefully get something back in return.
What does it take to become a member of SAG?
To become a member of SAG, I think it's changed so much over time. They do have a new media contract. So it used to be that you can go and do extra work on a SAG production, which would be like network TV or something like that. And you get 3 union vouchers. So once you get those 3 union vouchers, you can go ahead and join. However, it's not like you just say, hey, I'm ready. It's like $3,200 right now. So be prepared to pay for that. Plus it's going to be, I'm not sure the exact number, but it's your fees, I think, are another $200 every single year. And I also want to say that before you join SAG, you have to remember, if you're a new actor as well, you're competing with people who've been in the industry for over 10 years. And once you're in, you can no longer do non-union projects. So it's also suggested to not join for as long as possible so that you can build up the credits and resumes before you're really competing with the competition that's there. So what else does it take? You could be tapped heart lead, which is when somebody really, really, really needs you and wants you specifically to work on a SAG project. They can just basically sign this paper and they let you in. I've been eligible for about 8-9 years and I haven't joined yet.
Okay.
But what would be the reason to join? I know you mentioned you want to hold out as long as possible. What would be the driving force?
I think the driving force to join the union, I would say ultimately, is protection.
Okay.
So for example, you wouldn't be working on those non-union projects, and any project you do work on, you're going to get paid for it. You're going to get your footage. They're going to get paid for traveling to said location. Whereas if you're non-union, everything's kind of on your own. And if something happens and you're non-union, that's on you. Whereas if you're with SAG, they're going to cover your butt and they're going to protect you and take care of things that need to be taken care of.
And do you have to be a part of SAG to be a part of certain projects?
Well, if you're SAG, you can't do non-union anymore.
Right.
So if you're non-union, you can still work on a union project, but there's only so many you can do before you become a must join.
Okay.
Then once you've done so many, then you have to join. And then you have to be ready to pay your dues, which are, you know, that X amount of money. And otherwise you can't work on the project before you pay up.
Gotcha.
So like me personally, if I wanted to like be on a movie, like I can get on that movie. I don't have to be a part of the SAG. I can just do that and I can do X amount of them and then I'm forced to join SAG.
Yeah.
Okay.
You would probably likely do backgrounds, you know, just starting out and stuff like that.
Creepy guy in the corner.
Yeah.
You could do that. Hey, I mean, that's what I think is great, is anybody and everybody can do it, can be a background and get paid, which is great. I mean, yeah, you literally sometimes just sit there. If they use you, they use you. If they don't, then you still get paid. And that's the cool thing about doing background work. If it's part of a certain company, as a background, you can do like a bajillion and you never have to join if you don't want to.
Okay.
But you can join the union doing background as well. And then you ultimately get paid more for the jobs that you do.
And do the big production companies only hire union people, or you said there's a small number of non-union people that they'll hire?
For the most part, if the production is union, they're going to try to hire as many union as possible. Okay. I feel like, say, for example, a film were to come here in Las Vegas, then it's going to be more okay for them to hire non-union local actors.
Okay.
And it's cheaper because we're not part of the union. They can pay us less.
Gotcha.
Do they ever bar you from auditioning for something if you're not part of the union?
No, I don't think so. I've never run into that situation.
And you said with SAG, you can't do non-union work again, right? Is that for life or just as a member?
Yeah, I think the cardinal rule is like once you're in, once you're a member, you can no longer do non-union work because that ultimately weakens the union. So once you're in, you're in. There is another option, which is not recommended, depending on who you speak to, but it's also called FICOR, which is financial core. And that allows you to do both, but you also don't get the same protections as the union. And they also sort of look down on it because you are contributing to helping weaken the union. So they don't really like it.
Because you mentioned it was like a $200 a year union fees that were due. If I just decide, I say, fuck the union, I don't want to like pay the fees anymore. Would they kick me out? Like, is my union status predicated on that $200 fee?
I think that if you were to work on a union production, you won't get paid. They're going to take it out anyways. Or sometimes they won't even hire you until your dues are paid up.
Huh.
You want to get paid, you got to pay up.
Okay. Gotcha. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So you mentioned when you first started out, like one of the biggest things is like choosing projects that might not further your career at all or might waste your time. Like, so when you get an agent, like that's kind of their main role, right? Is like kind of parsing through all of these things and finding stuff going to help your career and all that, right?
Yeah. Your agents get 10 to 20% and you have to do the other 80 to 90% of the work to get work. Your agent's job should be weeding out all of these projects, but you also have to provide your agent with enough material. They have things to work for. It's really hard for your agents because they work for free. Ultimately, they're working for free and they don't get paid until you book a job and then they get their payment. So you need to be able to provide them with as much material as possible so that they can help get you work. Otherwise, you're kind of just running in circles. So that would mean getting as much footage together these days, having a social media following, getting, you know, footage, headshots, networking. You have to be out there working as well. Your agents are only going to do as much as they can. So ultimately your career.
And so the agent, they're bringing you like opportunity, like they'll see like a casting call. They're like, the Caslin would be perfect for this. Let me see if she's interested. Like, is that like they just present it to you and you kind of pick what you want, or they kind of dictate, say like, hey, I need you to work this.
For the most part, there's casting websites. Actors Access is also called Breakdowns. I think that's the most known one. That's the most popular.
Okay.
That's the most legit one. There's other sites like LA Casting, Casting Frontier, Backstage, and so often. For the most part, your agents are on Actors Access. So there's kind of two parts of Actors Access. One, there's the castings I, as an individual, can access, but agents can access sort of the other castings that I don't get access to.
Yeah.
And then they submit people who they think are right for the project. The casting director on the other end selects who they want, and then you get called in. So getting called in is a pretty big thing because there's thousands. I'm talking like it could be 4,000 or 5,000 people auditioning for one role. So getting an audition is essentially a win. Doesn't always feel like it, but it is.
Yeah. It's like a numbers game for a lot of these things. You did mention that they'll see a spot and then they'll send like your resume in. So you don't even have a say in that. Like they're just kind of like auto submitting you for a lot of these things.
Yeah. I mean, you have your profile with your pictures and resume on Actors Access already, but you should have a conversation with your agents before, you know, when you guys are signing, I will do this project. I won't do that project, you know, nudity or your religious beliefs. Like they should know those things because there's, you know, you shouldn't have to do those things that you're not comfortable with.
Yeah. Cause we had an actor friend come on our podcast a few months ago and he's a bigger dude like us. And he's always getting casted as like prison inmate or like a cop that's been on the force way too long. So he had like a really like niche profile. Yeah. Yeah, so I was wondering like if his agent is like, oh, it's auto posting for him every time. Like, Tori would be great for this to send him in. And yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it's either there or if your agent has a great connection with production company XYZ, then the production company will go directly to your agent. And that would be even better because then it's a smaller pool to have to compete and audition against just the people on their roster.
Does everything that you do from then on, like, with an agent, does it have to go through them or can you submit yourself as well on your own?
You can always submit yourself depending on your union status. Okay. If you are union, there's just not as much for you to do on your own. I mean, they're really, which is why another reason why they say to wait to join the union as long as possible, because then you can be submitting yourself for more projects. You kind of have a little bit more options, but they may not be the quality that a union job is.
I got you. And so you said you've been eligible for a few years. Is there what kind of things are you looking to put into place before you finally make that jump?
So I live in Las Vegas right now. Almost every single job here is a non-union job. So for me, it just doesn't even make sense to join. Even when we have, because like everything films here in Las Vegas, like think about like The Hangover and every movie that has, you know, The Strip or you know, international projects come here. We've got Chinese series, Indian series, like they've all been here. And sometimes they still cast from LA. So I'm like, well, that's exciting. Not. I think that I would have to, before I joined, it has to be really worth it for me.
I got you.
So one of the things you did say with the union, you can't do non-union work. Is that explicitly just for acting? Like if you say, if you wanted to start writing or editing for like a TV series, that's non-union. Are you able to do that?
Oh yeah, you can.
Okay.
Yeah. So SAG-AFTRA is specifically for actors. You know, there's the Writers Guild, Directors Guild,
yeah,
IATSE. So everybody has their own unions. And if you're SAG for an actor, you can do whatever else you want in the other unions. Yeah, so you're not limited.
I saw on your YouTube channel you were doing kind of an interview show for was it in China? Was it for the Chinese show you were doing?
I think you may be referring to the Japanese travel show.
Yeah, it was. You also had a scene in a Chinese drama, so yeah. I wasn't sure which one that was.
I did both, and oddly enough, it was literally within like 2 weeks of each other that I got booked on those jobs. So I was like killing it in the Asia market for a little while. I don't know what it was, but yeah, one was the scene was for a Chinese TV series that filmed in Las Vegas. It was actually the number one Chinese TV series in the country. That was called 7 Days. And I did have a reoccurring role on it. No, I don't speak Chinese. I know that's like the next question. Yeah. They like had us audition. We had lines, which was so funny because they just dubbed us over anyways. So I'm like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what, like, because I was watching, I was like, it looks like this is dub, like, or it sounds dub anyway. You were actually speaking Japanese in that travel show, right?
Yeah. So I don't speak Japanese either. That was like the appeal of the show is the director. We would go to a new location. We were showing off different areas of San Diego. I was acting as like the American tour guide. The director would write on the cue cards, like, y'all, I'm talking like 5 or so minutes before what I was going to say in Japanese before we recorded it. So he's like, okay, this is what we're going to say. And he like wrote it as phonetically as he could. And then he told me it a couple times and he's like, okay, ready and action. I was like, oh God, like, I really hope I'm not saying like anything terrible and inappropriate. But yeah, that's sort of the joke and appeal of the show is to have someone who doesn't speak Japanese. But yeah, that was fun. It was like one of the best jobs ever. It really was.
It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I essentially literally got paid to be a tourist and do things that I would have never paid for on my own to go and do. So, and San Diego is like the best place in the world. So I was like, yes, I will do this. It was awesome. It was really, really awesome. Sign me up. I'm ready to go again.
So you were dancing and then you decided to go into acting and you said you were doing background acting. Like how did you start doing like the background acting?
So this is always a really funny story.
Okay.
I didn't know when you were starting doing background that you could actually get paid for it. And so I have a twin sister. And so we were going to college in California and I started doing like background work and I started auditioning for USC like thesis films. And they had me coming work and working on those films. And I thought it was like the coolest thing in the world. Cause I was like, oh yeah, I'm killing it in USC. Like they love me. But I was doing background work and that's what it was. I was doing background work for free. And then it was my sister who has no interest in being in the entertainment industry. She somehow found out that you could be getting paid to do background work. And so she actually went and signed up with Central Casting in LA and she started doing background work on like Scrubs and the OC and she was getting paid. And I was like, wait a minute, what? You can get paid to do this stuff? And yeah, that basically was like a huge game changer for us because you're getting paid and you get really tasty food on set and you could do your homework on set as long as you're not like bothering anybody. And then you meet a lot of people who kind of, I mean, there's a lot of not good information that's being shared on set, but there's also, you know, a lot of people. And if you're brand new, it's a great way to learn and meet people. And I highly suggest everybody to do background work when they're starting, just so you have an idea, just so you know what it's like, and you get to see.
And they usually do like open casting calls for background work, right? For the most part,
it depends on where you are.
Okay.
So, like Central Casting, for example, you basically go in and you sort of make a profile, an account. I can't remember; it's been so long, but I think you have to definitely be in their system. And how it works is you call up their line every day. So you have to do this even while you're on set to get work for the next day. So you have to call in, listen to the jobs you think you'll be right for, and then apply. I can't remember if it's like press a button or contact so-and-so. I don't remember what it is, but it's still a casting because they're still looking for 3 women that look like this and, you know, 5 people that look like that.
So you were living in Los Angeles. What made you move to Las Vegas?
Let's see, about
traffic.
10 years. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going.
Yeah, LA traffic is so terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I had moved out to the Inland Empire again. My boyfriend and I were living out in Ontario, which I don't have the most amazing things to say about Ontario. So if you guys are listening, I'm sorry. But we were, you know, it's about an hour away again, and I'm commuting back and forth into Burbank every day, which is about an hour. I think the hustle and bustle and the rat race of LA just gets you after a while. And I think like the last year and a half of me living there, I got like 2 auditions. And I was like, this is like, I'm so over this. Like nothing's happening. Obviously, I could have been putting in more work, but I didn't realize at the time that I wasn't working that hard. I thought I was, but I wasn't. we got really sick of it. He hated LA, the traffic, you know, we're spending so much money on rent and the commute. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm literally working to survive. And that's it. That's all I can do is I can work to pay my rent. And that's it. We came out to Vegas and for my birthday, a couple of months prior, I had an audition. Cirque du Soleil has like open auditions all the time. And I had one the day after my birthday planned here in Vegas. So we came out for that audition. I never went, but we had such a good time here in Las Vegas that I was like, you know, our lease was up. So I was like, I wouldn't mind if we just left LA altogether and tried something new. And my boyfriend had some friends out here and it kind of just really worked out. It was a good move.
So you mentioned that you didn't realize you weren't working as hard. Like, was that something that you found out like when all the stress was off, you had more time to kind of put into your work when you got to Las Vegas?
Yeah. You know, I think this happens, and I think there's this sort of, I don't know if it's a culture that happens in LA, and I see it now that I'm not living there anymore, but there's just this vibe of working, 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 auditioning, struggle, working, working, working. And you find yourself literally just working and being really good at your day job while not actually having time or the resources to pursue your career. I think that's what it was. Like I couldn't really afford classes or really great proper headshots until I moved away and I was able to start working to build up. I think that's just what it was. I just was never in classes the way I should have when I was there. And I know I was having a conversation with somebody and they're like, if you want it, you can make it happen. I'm like, yeah, but like when you're 23 years old and you're paying for rent, your car payment, insurance, your phone, casting services, I'm like, that stuff adds up. Like, I don't know who can afford that. Kind of where I got stuck for a little while. But yeah, I definitely think I could have been doing more when I was out there and I didn't really realize it until I moved away.
I got you.
Is your boyfriend an actor?
He actually makes films.
Oh.
He used to be an actor. I don't really know why he stopped. He just really wanted to make films instead. And I've tried to get him to go to some of these castings, especially like when they're looking for like real couples. I'm like, let's go. I don't think he's really interested in that anymore.
Do you do any of the stuff besides acting? I saw some other credits like for editing and directing and writing. How did you start doing those kind of things?
So I actually got into editing because I had some demo reels of my own that I needed to get pieced together. So of course, what was I going to do? I went to my boyfriend who I was like, can you edit these? And he was like, no, you can edit them. And he taught me how to edit. And from there, I've been able to edit all my own projects. I think it's like one of the best things I've ever learned was how to edit both video and photo on my own. Now I can do anything. I can literally record and edit whatever I want. Edit my reels, edit your reels. I don't know if I'm quite qualified to edit like a film, but if I needed to like get smaller projects, I feel comfortable and confident that at least I can do that. So essentially it all came from
necessity.
Yeah. Asking for help. And then he just taught me and yeah. pretty much all I do is just my own personal projects. Like, I don't trust myself to work on somebody else's project. Like, I don't want to mess your stuff up. I'll mess up my stuff, but I'm not going to mess up yours. Kind of how I feel about it.
So, do you do all the editing for your podcast?
I do.
Nice.
I do. And that was really hard in the beginning too, because I never opened up Adobe Audition ever. Oh God. It was really traumatizing. Actually, my first couple episodes, I'm like, yeah, my first episode for my podcast, Always Acting Up Podcast.
I said, save plugs to the end.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to keep plugging. My first episode, I had to record it like 3 different times because the first time it was just so bad. And then I did it again. And then I was like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, you guys can like bounce ideas off each other. And I'm like, this is great. I was trying to do it on my own and just sit there and like talk into the camera and like try to have a conversation with myself. I'm like, this is way too hard. I can't do this.
Like, when you're doing like a podcast like that, do you feel like it's acting?
Not at all.
Okay.
Me trying to tell a story, it just wasn't working.
I got you.
Okay.
And I did have an outline, but it just was not, it wasn't happening for me.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Like, that's one of the things I'm most thankful about doing this podcast is being able to hear how admittedly, like, I don't want to say stupid, that's kind of crass, but like, I didn't like the way I sounded on, you know, when it was recording. So it was cool to like hear that and then, you know, get better at it just for, you know, for my own edification, I guess.
Joke's on you. You haven't got better at it. I just got better at editing.
Well, yeah, that's totally it too. I had to learn to still do it. I still say a lot of ums. Mm-hmm. I'm really working at it. It's such a filler word. And I'm like, I really got to stop doing this. But yeah, you notice all those things that you didn't notice before. They're like, wow, I do that a lot.
So you did mention ums. When you're acting though, I'm assuming you don't say ums a lot. Is that just because it's not part of the script?
It's different. It's different because you're having a communication with somebody else and you're literally having a conversation with that person and you know what the conversation is. So there's really no room for any ums because you're literally just in a conversation.
Okay.
It's completely different.
Because like we've interviewed a few actors and like I noticed that they do say a lot of ums or but us and like all those like common things. But like then you see them in film and all and like they don't do any of that. So it's very quirky, I guess.
We also so like really trained to like learn your lines, know what you're talking about. And if you have like your motivation and you, I think it's just so important. Like, what are you talking about? It doesn't really allow room for ums or because you're confident and you know the story and your motivation for delivering those lines. So it's a little different.
So and you've been doing your podcast for about a year now, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine you've had a lot of growth in that experience. What's been some of like the lessons that you've learned like through doing that might have improved your life or your career or elsewhere?
So many. Like, I don't even know where to start. I mean, I don't even know if there's like any one thing in particular with this podcast. Goodness gracious. Like, there's so much. Like, there's been so many times where I'm like, this is stupid. I need to stop doing this. But I feel like in the past, I've done so many projects and I've just stopped at some point because I didn't get, you know, X amount of views and I felt like the work wasn't paying off. I'm determined this time to keep going. And so that's something I'm going to figure out how to make it work. Whereas I think earlier in my career, I'm like, oh, it's not working. Let's just stop and do something else. Now I'm like, you know what? We're going to actually try and figure this out. So I've really been pushing myself to keep going with that. There's a lot I learned about actors as well. And I realize I'm doing it myself right now. I think that when you give people an opportunity to talk, they don't stop talking. And that's something I realized. I'm like, gosh, I've just been talking so much. But when I'm on the other side, just asking people questions, you'd be surprised at how much people want to share and how much they have to tell. And I'm like, well, you probably weren't like this, you know, in normal conversations, but now that I'm giving you the floor, some people just go. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Like, this is awesome.
The best is like when they apologize for it.
Yeah, well.
Like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking too much. It's like, no, you're doing what I want you to do. Like, this, you're giving me content.
You're giving us content. Yeah.
Exactly. I've learned that a lot about people, a lot of conversations about promotion and like self-promotion as well. Some people don't want to do it, which I think is really strange. I mean, nobody really wants to sit there and like, hey, look at me, but sorry, but you kind of have to.
Subscribe to our Patreon. You know, like it's, you don't want to do it.
Yeah. Like, you kind of, there's just certain things you have to do that I realize people don't want to do, but I'm like, but you want a career in the arts, but you don't want to support the arts. I'm like, this doesn't really make any sense. I don't know if you guys experienced this, but it's way more work than I ever anticipated.
Yeah. Josh knows about that. Yeah.
I thought I was going to go and like have a conversation and post it and wham, bam, done.
It'd be so sweet if it was just like that. I'm actually envious. I don't want to talk ill to the other podcasters where they don't do as heavy editing. They kind of just record it and post it. And I'm like, oh, I wish I can just do that. It would just be so nice.
Unfortunately, I'm like incapable of speaking with intelligibly. So he has to do a lot of editing to make me sound good.
There's also like a line with that too. Cause what I was doing in my earlier episodes, I was so over editing where I would cut out like too much space, too much ums. That sentence didn't really sound so good. And I would like, you know, shape the story. And I was like, you know what? This is taking me, cause I was doing video as well. And I was editing that separately. But I was also doing multi-cam video for my podcast and it looked fantastic. But I was like, you know what?
Yeah, your videos look very nice. I was impressed with them.
Yeah, but I stopped doing that because I was like, it's taking like 5 days to edit one episode and I'm like, no one's listening. nobody's watching. They're listening, but they're not watching on YouTube. So it's like, I got to cut this. I got to do some adjusting here.
So for our listeners, though, we haven't really talked about your podcast. What is your podcast about? How did it start?
So my podcast is called Always Acting Up. It is on all podcasting platforms and I do have the video on YouTube so you can watch there as well. I also just recently started a blog to kind of supplement the podcast. And so my podcast started as just my personal stories and journeys as an actress in the entertainment industry. And that kind of came from a blog that I used to do, I would say like 7 years ago as well, called Dancetress Acting Up. But seeing how I don't dance anymore, I was like, all right, well, we got to figure out something. So I was like, why don't we just do Always Acting Up? And it started as just documenting my personal stories. Because if you think about it, you do so much in life and then you forget about it. So I kind of wanted it to be like a portfolio of all my stuff. And I talk about stories or this happened or that happened. And I met this terrible director. I booked this cool job. And so now it's sort of evolved into conversations with industry experts and it's awesome because I get to ask them anything I want within boundaries and how they were successful. And I get to share my stories and tips and tricks along the way. So there's a lot to learn for people looking to get into the industry, their strategies, what they're doing, what they did, because there is no 1, 2, 3 steps on how to succeed in the entertainment industry. So we kind of get all the information and use it how you want, you know, take their advice, learn from this, don't learn from that, make it your own. Yeah. And so I recently just launched a blog to sort of supplement that. And that focuses on how to look, feel, and perform better in front of the camera and in real life. So that's, you know, your fitness tips, wardrobe suggestions, you know, breathing exercises, yoga techniques to help you feel more comfortable and relaxed.
Your podcast, you said, kind of like turned into where you're just kind of talking to industry people. I'm assuming, are a lot of this like your friends? Do you mostly just hang out with industry people in real world, or do you kind of like get tired of those type of people?
Yeah, you know, I think naturally you just hang around people who have similar interests. And so everybody I know, like pretty much everybody is involved in the industry of some sort, whether it be behind the camera, in front of the camera, musicians, artists. I always feel like I'm around like-minded people. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of hard to say, like, I would like to have friends in different areas and different avenues, but I find myself having a hard time relating only because as a freelancer, as an artist, I work 24/7. I may work on Sunday. I may not work on Sunday. And it's hard to link up schedules. It's hard to link up lifestyles. So I don't know. I just always gravitate towards like-minded people with similar careers.
Because it's interesting with your podcast is you want to talk to the same people you talk to like every day. And that was one of the things that I didn't want to talk to people that really are that do tech or do like the hobbies I enjoy, just because I want to talk to different people. And I actually find it more interesting that you want to keep talking to like those people. That's awesome.
You know, the problem is I don't know anything else. Like, this is all I do. Like, people are like, so what are your hobbies? What do you do? I'm like, acting, take pictures, make a podcast. Like, well, what do you do for fun? I'm like, well, this is what I do for fun. They're like, yeah, but like anything else? I'm like, no. Like, I don't have anything to talk about if it's not related to movies or something. I'm like, I'm really traveling. Like, you can't travel every day. I think it's great what you guys are doing. I'm not that cool. I'm kind of just know what I know.
No, but that's cool because you're able to, like, when we talk to, like, actors, like, all the knowledge we've gained from acting has been, like, secondhand from other actors. And that's, like, that's actually kind of what I like, because, like, I'm learning, like, we talk to a lot of comedians, and Seamus wants to start doing comedy and doing more stand-up, and, like, talking to, like, everyone, like, secondhand and learning what they know and, like, everything like that. We're kind of, like, absorbing it in a weird way, which is awesome.
I was curious because I was listening. I was browsing through your podcast episodes, and I did notice you had a lot of comedians on there. And I was listening to one with an SNL writer. I don't know if there was some type of association with, like, improv that you guys do, or how did you end up with so many comedians?
I've been a huge comedy fan for a long time. So, like, we just kind of, like, we had a couple of comedians on in the beginning. They made the cast very entertaining. So, like, it was just, like, a cool thing to do. And we started, like, enjoying talk to them.
Yeah. And, like, the comedians are interesting because they want to talk, because, like, they're used to performing in front of people. Very, very similar to actors. In a sense where we've had, like, other creatives where they don't talk as much, or they're not used to people asking them, like, stuff, or it's like performing type people. They just want to start performing no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, you guys have some really cool guests on there. I was like, I got to, like, up my game, like, get my shit together. But yeah, I think it's really cool, especially if you're not so familiar with the industry. I can imagine you just learn and soak up so much information.
I think the creative process is really kind of universal too. And so, like, mm-hmm. like it's been cool, like, just kind of talking to people about that aspect of life. Cause like you were saying, I don't think a lot of people that have chosen kind of like normal or more generic paths in their life have a chance to really explore that too much.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things also I like about acting. I think there's always this idea of you can only do it when you're younger. You can only do it if you're in LA or New York, Chicago, wherever the big market is. But it's really not like that. Like, how many movies need grandmas, grandpas? Like, we need people of all sorts. So I really think that you can be acting and doing what you want at any age.
Like you mentioned, like, belly dancing was really, like, open to, like, a lot of different body types. And that's, like, the one thing, like, you always hear people, like, saying actors, you know, I got to meet a certain body type to be an actor, but that's not true at all. And you can literally be any type of body type. You can be any personality, any nationality, like all that is needed in entertainment and film and TV and stuff.
I think it's really changing because I think it probably was like that. I mean, if you watch some, like, old episodes of, like, Friends, for example, they're very, very, very petite on that show.
Yeah, that's fair.
Very, very white too. So.
Yeah. Yes. It is. Absolutely. But yeah, there's a movement going on and everything's sort of changing and evolving. And I'm like, thank you. This is exactly what I think everyone's been needing and wanting, and opens the doors up for everybody, which is fantastic.
We were talking to Jermaine Williams a couple of weeks ago. He's a comedic actor, and he was talking about how, like, you can get into the industry at any age as well. Like, because, like, mm-hmm. you were saying, because there's always roles for grandmas and grandpas and everything. So I think that's pretty cool also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, people always, like, fear, like, oh, I'm an actress or an actor, like, kind of, like, I'll get aged out at, like, age 30 or whatever once I'm, like, too old to, like, be, like, a feature actor. And there's plenty of actors that start later in life.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that way. I definitely feel the pressure of aging out, especially as a female.
Yeah.
I still think that's one of the things that we need to work on. Because, you know, you will see a male actor in their 40s, 50s, 60s with a 20 or 30-year-old.
Like George Clooney would, like, be paired with, like a young, like, 20 something actress, and it's just like this guy's like 50 something, like, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, you start feeling, I feel it now in my 30s, and I'm like, yeah, I definitely start feeling like I've aged out, but I do feel like it is changing for everybody in all ages. And that's why I also think it's important to get your own hustle going, like my podcast, like have something else that you're working to make yourself more valuable, but to also fulfill your creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool that you can, like, that, like, nowadays you can build something on your own too. You know, you don't, there isn't as much gatekeeping, it seems like.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things, like you did mention, like social media, that's one of the hustles you need to do as an actor and actress, is like have like a social media presence and like develop like that audience. Do you feel like the influencers and the social media people are kind of taking the acting jobs for some extent?
Yes and no. I did a lot of webinars and panels and just kind of listened in to a lot of casting directors speak during the pandemic. And all of them said, no, social media doesn't matter. However, However, you'll see maybe 6 casting notices that all say, please post your social media following. Please do not submit unless you have 10,000 followers. And you're like, wait a minute, y'all just said it doesn't matter. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities and roles available. So I guess for some it does. But also what they were finding out is a lot of people who, say, for example, were strictly social media influencers, once they got on set, they didn't know what to do because they've never taken class. They weren't trained. They weren't good. And just because you've got a bajillion followers on TikTok, it doesn't always follow over into bringing your following to the theaters. And I think that is sort of evolving as well. I think there was this idea that it was a built-in fan base, but it doesn't always cross over.
Because that's interesting. Because like, if you wanted to get like a Tom Cruise, you obviously have to have like a union movie and you have to like go through all the hoops, but like you can get like a YouTube influencer or like someone on TikTok, like probably a lot easier. And like, you don't have to worry about the union actor stuff, and you probably don't really have to pay them too much. So they'll probably end up doing it relatively free, I would imagine, for a lot of those people. And so you can like tag big names to your movie or show.
That's exactly what they're doing, especially for more lower budgets or independent films. They are still bringing in social media influencers to be a part of those projects.
That happens with like comedy clubs too. Like somebody who's big on YouTube will come in, and they're not really a seasoned stage comedian though. And you know, it doesn't really translate all that well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really, I mean, it's hard because like, you're like, gosh, it's so annoying, but I'm like, this isn't going anywhere. So you might as well join them and see if you can compete in the game as well. It's hard. Like you gotta like be on social media like all day, like a full-time job. Like I don't have time for that. So I'm like, at least if I have somewhat of a presence, like you'll see my face there. I don't have like crazy following or anything like that, but at least I'm there, right? Counts for something.
You handle all of that yourself as well?
Yeah. One of these days I got to get an assistant because I'm like, this is a lot with the podcast, the editing, an audition. When an audition comes up, everything stops. And, you know, I went from 10 projects. Now I got 12 projects and social media and promoting and this and that and this and that. Yeah, it's a lot. You know, that's the thing about auditions. They come out of the blue and you have to get them done by a certain time and make room, rearrange your schedule, and get it done.
Yeah. You seem to be doing a pretty good job, especially by yourself.
I'm trying.
No, I think that's one of the coolest things about you is the fact that you do the editing, you do the writing, you do everything for your show. Because I do that for our show, and like I wish I could be like Seamus in the show up every week and look pretty. I want to give you a huge shout outs because that's such hard work, and it's awesome that you were driven to do it. I mean, you could have had your boyfriend do it I'm sure you could have bagged him or something. He would have done it, but like you're like, oh, show me, and then I'm gonna learn, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna keep doing it, and it's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, eventually my goal is I would like to
pay
like
for an editor. 100%.
Yeah.
That's everyone's goal.
You could scale up so much if we had help, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like even 2 people doing it would probably be a lot easier.
You would think.
Yeah. That was a huge reason why I started my blog also, because I was like, if I can like monetize the blog and bring people to my podcast, and I can use that money to have them do this, then I can free up and do something else. Yeah, I'm working on it.
I know. Yeah. We usually ask one last question from our guest. Any words of wisdom for anyone that's aspiring to kind of join the acting career?
Go listen to Always Acting Up podcast, where you can learn tips and tricks from industry experts. I'm joking, but I'm not. I mean, honestly, I think people have heard this over and over and over. And I heard one of your guests saying, I want to say the first thing is to just do it, just start. But before you do that, do some research and figure it out. Do a little bit of researching so you know the wrong's right. This is right. This is wrong. Just so you have a little bit more of a guideline as opposed to just like diving right into it. Because you don't want to get stuck in a crappy situation or, you know, meet someone who's like, yeah, it's going to cost you $3,200 to start. I'll take your headshots. Like, you don't want to get into that. Do some research and then do it. But ultimately, you'll figure it out. Like podcasting, you'll figure it out. No one's going to be amazing right off the bat. It's going to take a little bit of work, you know, time. Just keep going.
You always hear like the horror stories of people joining like those fake agencies and giving them like their life savings to like get headshots done and like get them in the industry. And yeah, it's so terrible.
It's people who dangle that golden carrot. You know, they know people want it. People are hungry and sometimes you're going to do what you can do. And it's not always the best way to go.
You could probably take half decent headshots with an iPhone at this point, right? Nowadays.
It's not recommended, but I also wouldn't suggest someone who's like brand new, who's never taken a class. Like I wouldn't even suggest going out and spending a bunch of money for pictures. Like use what you have until you get to a point where you need to take professional headshots, because they can be really expensive, really expensive.
Caslin, it's been an absolute blast having you on the podcast this evening. We really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your show. And thank you guys for listening. This has been super, super fun Saturday night.
Awesome.
Where can our listeners find more of you, your work, and everything awesome about you?
Yeah, so you can pretty much type my name into Google, Caslin Rose, Caslin. I mean, there's like a couple people with my name, but you're really honestly not going to find anybody else with my name. So go into Google, type my name. You should find my website, CaslinRose.com. You can find my Instagram at CaslinRose. You can email me at CaslinRose@gmail.com. AlwaysActingUpPodcast.com, AlwaysActingUpBlog.com. It's all linked to CaslinRose.com. Very simple to find me. I'm not someone that hides as much as I would love to. I can't really do that. All podcasting platforms, YouTube, you can find me. And I'll see you guys there.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you guys. You guys have a good evening.
You too.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to talk to our actors. It's funny, we literally were talking the other night about like not having enough actors on, and she's really cool.
I enjoyed talking to her. It was cool. One of the things I really liked, the production quality of her podcast is great. You know, the videos are awesome. They're edited very well. She seems like she's killing it on social media. Everything is kind of pretty, like the quality is very high, you know? So
yeah.
I was interested to talk to her. She's definitely like killing it on that level.
Like when you sent me her IMDb, I'm like, oh wow. She's been in a lot of like cool, like little movies and stuff like that. And like, it's interesting. Cause like it's such a hustle, like with like acting. And it's like one of those things where we didn't really go into like this. Unfortunately, it was on my list of things I wanted to talk about, was like the rejection and like the numbers game. You're just constantly doing auditions. So like every audition you do, even if you don't get it, is still like net positive. And you just keep grinding it.
Even like getting an audition is a win.
Yeah, it really is. Cause like you're competing against every other actor or actress in that category. And that's the interesting thing with acting as well. Like you kind of get into like a category. I remember like Tori Atkins was very adamant, like, this is my category. I'm trying to like move away from it, but like I still like have to take these roles. And
that's one of the funniest things to me too, is that like you can be as discriminatory and offensive and anything when you're describing the character that you want in your in your play.
You can basically say I want a explicit race, I want an explicit sexual orientation, I want an explicit like whatever, and like no other job can do that. I can't post
like, right. You can describe like how you want them to look in booty shorts.
Yeah.
You can describe their weight. You can describe how their big bellowing belly like flops over their waist. You know what I mean? You can explain like how much you want that paunch to be over the belt.
I realize I'm cutting all that out.
Okay.
You want to try another take of that?
what was wrong with that?
Is this
gross? Explicit. This is disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you went a little overboard.
Yeah. It's interesting. Where were we? Yeah. What were we talking about? We were talking about.
It's just the rat race of it all. Like it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool that she's like taking her experience with that and putting it into another creative outlet that's probably going to help a lot of people. I think that's a good thing also.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the one thing I am a little envious of with her, is because she has an acting career. She's able to like talk to actors on that level, and like, or not just actors, but people that work in the industry. Like she's seen the behind the film, and like we're only living like vicariously or like secondhand or a lot of those things. So it's actually really cool that she knows like what are the questions, or like what would be like a cool question to ask like a DP or something. Whereas like, we just don't have that, but like we're gaining it in a sense. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's why, like, we try and focus on like human questions within that also, like,
it appeals to mass audience. Like,
yeah,
ultimately, like we're in a weird niche. That's not a niche. We talk to creative people, which is somewhat of a niche, but the people that we talk to in that creative space are not niche categories. Like, we talk to comedians, we talk to directors, we talk to writers, we talk to actors, we talk to artists. And so, like, each of those fields are separate niches in themselves and all, but like, it kind of is under that creative umbrella.
Our niche.
We had this niche discussion as well.
Our niche. I'm not going to remember. I don't remember anything past 2013 reliably. Yeah. So niche. So I say niche.
Or niche. I think it's niche. I think it's wherever you're from. I think it's different parts of the country. All right. But
well, I'm going to say niche. Our niche is interesting or creative people.
Yeah.
And so that's everyone.
And the best thing is every creative person's interesting. So
yes. So there's a nice overlap there.
Yeah.
The only, like, some creative people don't talk much, but that's okay too.
As long as they open up towards the end, we can get there.
Yeah, which, and you know, that's happened a lot. That's one of my favorite things, is like seeing somebody or open up to us. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Is your name a stage name, or is that your real name?
It's my real name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's very unique and all, so I wasn't sure where it came from.
Yeah. It's my actual name. My last name is Greek, so it's Katsaris. I mean, I love my last name, but like, when people see my first name and then they see my last name, they're like, I quit. I'm done. So I'm like, I have to make it easy for people. So it's like, I'll give you Rose. How's that? That's my middle name. I'll give you Castlin. You can struggle on that one. It's really not that hard, but some people, you know, it's something you haven't seen before. So I figured I'll just make it easy for you and Castlin Rose.